Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Now, this is the moment you've all been waiting for. We are live on the Charity Stripe Podcast with your hosts, Alex, Josh, and Nick.
We're back, baby. Stripe Sports, it's free throws, cuz there, Freddy Fisher, Disciples, DJ, Nikki, Snacks, Kreider. March Madness, weekend one in the books. Round of 64 had a boatload of upsets. Round of 32, the cream rose to the top. Gentlemen, we'll take it back to our old acting class days. What worked, what didn't, and why type situation. We all had a lot of hot takes, a lot of predictions in the round of 64, round of 32, and all of March Madness. So I guess I'll kick us off. What was I right about? What was I wrong about? And kind of why did that all happen? Personally, I was right about Gonzaga's success and Baylor's downfall. I thought Gonzaga would have a solid tournament. I think that's nine of the last something I forget, Sweet 16s they've been to, which is pretty impressive out of Mark Few. And that something is a low number. I thought Baylor was going to get bounced in the round of 32, no matter who they played, Clemson or New Mexico. And that leads me to what went wrong, New Mexico and Kentucky. I think we saw that youth can really hurt you in this tournament. And seniority and age and how long you've played together is pretty important. And yes, Kentucky had some upperclassmen, but predominantly a lot of underclassmen on that team. And that was a huge downfall against an Oakland team who got hot shooting the basketball and had a really good second round against NC State as well. And then New Mexico, I thought you ride the hot hand with the Mountain West into the tournament. Clemson proved that they were the team that showed out in the first half of the college basketball season. They showed out, were really strong against Baylor, and they're going to present a really tough test for Arizona. And we'll get into predictions shortly in the Sweet 16, round three. Nick, how about you? What were you happy about and pleased about with your takes? What went wrong for you?
I think I liked all of the 11 seeds to at least go to the round of 32, and they all did, I believe, right?
New Mexico didn't.
New Mexico was the only one. The one that we were the highest on, which is pretty wild, but Oregon was high on them. NC State still in the mix. Duquesne, you know, was bullish on them. Mm-hmm. So these were some pretty good 11 seeds, and I don't necessarily know if you call them, you know, huge upsets, but by bracket standards, they are. I think I did like Clemson, you know, if they were to get past New Mexico to go pretty far. So, you know, I might even take them to get to the Elite Eight here against, you know, beating Arizona. I wasn't particularly happy with the day three, day four round of 32 upsets. You know, I think the standard that we were going by was that if you take enough dogs in this tournament, then you're going to win some money back. And that proved to work the first round. You know, we were all up plus money because we had some really good upsets in there. But then if you go ahead and take the dogs in the second round, you would have only hit one bet. It was all favorites. Baylor was the only team to lose that was a favorite. Clemson was the only dog, and they weren't even that big of a dog. So you probably ended up losing more money than you won if that was the case for you this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Toss.
Yeah. I think, to me, the tournament this year almost becomes akin to the NBA playoffs in a sense, where when a top seed plays a lower seed, when it's a one versus an eight, sure, can an eight get one or two games? Yes. But more often than not, the higher seed will win. And I think that's what we kind of saw in the round of 32. You're playing a different opponent, but you have the momentum of getting your legs underneath you for the first game. And odds are you look a lot more like what you looked like during the regular season than you did in a one-off playoff game. And that's why not only did, you know, did it go chalk in the set in the round of 32, but a lot of the favorites won by a large margin. And I think, you know, this was a bracket where if you looked all across the United States, a lot of people were high on UConn. A lot of people were high on Arizona, Illinois, Iowa State, like a lot of these teams, UNC, Alabama, that are still in, Creighton, Tennessee. These were Purdue heavily picked teams to go to the Final Four and to go all the way. And for good reason. They have rosters that can take you all the way there. They all have impact players. They all have youth that can step in when you need them to, but they also have veterans who have been there and know what it takes, and are hungry for a Final Four berth and playing for a national championship. So it's one of those things where it's like, you can't really be that surprised in March Madness when all of the higher seeds win in the round of 32, because those are the better teams, right? Like, that's why the seeding is what the seeding is.
Were there any teams that you had that you thought were better, that were going far, that you were bullish on, that got bounced earlier?
Well, I thought if Kansas had had McCullers that they would have had a chance to go far, but they didn't get him in the first two rounds. They kind of teased us with, is he going to play? Is he not going to play? And that team wasn't deep enough to win their round of 32 game against a Gonzaga team who you already mentioned is really strong and well coached. Most of the teams that are in the tournament still are well coached at this point. So it's one of those things where if you're not prepared, you're going to get bounced. See John Calipari and the Kentucky Wildcats. If you don't know how to prepare against a guy who's only shot 8 2-pointers in the entire season, then I don't know what to tell you. And look, Oakland was plucky against NC State. I don't think NC State's going past Marquette. I think I said in the first 2 weeks of the season that I really liked Marquette. They have my favorite player in college basketball, Tyler Kolek. One of the best guys I've seen, and one of them, you guys didn't allow me to take them all the way to the Final Four, was UNC, and they look really strong right now. Not to mention, their average age is akin to the Oklahoma City Thunder's average age. Their average age is 22.6 years, and the Thunder is 22.8, I think. So that just goes to show, like, with the transfer portal and the NIL era, some of these guys are playing until they're 23, 24 years old. And that's very different than playing against an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old. You've got a lot more basketball under your belt, and you're also you've turned into a different human. You've probably put on 10, 15 pounds more, and your brain has developed for 6+ years. Like, it's almost not fair in certain respects, but obviously anything can happen in this tournament. A shame to see our Texas Longhorns go down like that. They really battled valiantly. And I know, you know, for another podcast for a different time, but I'm proud of Rodney Terry. He's a good coach. You don't like our team gets up for big games, and I can hang my hat on that. You know, there's nothing embarrassing about losing to a really good Tennessee team who could go all the way. And I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Cool. All right. We got there. What about three takeaways? If you guys want to give them, Nick, we'll start with you. Three takeaways from the round of 64, round of 32, and then maybe a prediction for the Sweet 16.
Three takeaways. All the one seeds are powerhouses, and would not be surprised whatsoever if this is just the Final Four, if all four of the one seeds were representing each of their sides of the bracket. Mm-hmm. Another takeaway, I think that the five and the two seeds and the three seeds, I feel like at the end of the day, like, this is just not a tournament for underdogs, you know. And this was like the case last year, where we had a lot of guys go super far that were Cinderellas, you know. And I think the Oakland 3-point shooter, you know, kind of jinxed himself, being like, we're not a Cinderella. Well, you're right, you're not, because you didn't make it far. You know, you won the first round, and technically beat a Cinderella, you need to make it a little bit further. So you kind of jinxed yourself, take the title. And then maybe the state of Texas is actually one of the more competitive states in basketball than we think. You know what I mean? Like, you think of the Carolinas because of Duke, UNC, Clemson, NC State. But Texas put up some pretty good teams this year. We had Baylor. We had our Horns. That A&M Houston game last night was insane. We probably didn't give A&M as enough credit as they deserve this year. And I highlighted, you know, on one of our shows that they're the number one offensive rebounding team in the nation. And it really showed in this game. They were getting a lot of extra possessions off of misses against Houston. So, you know, there's a big reason why they ended up making it to overtime. And Houston did have some guys who fouled out. And so they had to fight and claw their way back in there. But they were a good team that, you know, kind of surprised some people. As a 9 seed, TCU also being in this tournament, you know, got to show them some love. They put up a good fight. But Texas basketball, you know, I mean,
and Texas Tech, and Texas don't count Tech,
out, and Texas Tech. There you go. It's a lot. Like, don't count us out ever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's good stuff. Is there a game that you're most excited to see in the Sweet 16 or a hot take prediction you have?
I'm excited to see the Duke and Houston game. I think that's going to be probably the most competitive, you know, just because it's Houston, that, you know, team that tossed, and I feel like, you know, could be the best team in this entire tournament, you know, although they put a really close game last night. And Duke, of course, you know, with how historic their program is and how talented their roster is. You know, I'm always excited to see my San Diego State Aztecs, you know, rematch of the championship game against UConn. We'll see how close that one could be, but I feel like if you're a fan going for the underdogs this year, that might be your best bet, you know, getting San Diego State back in there. And then, of course, NC State's 11, but, you know, they won the ACC.
Yeah, nice. Toss, three takeaways in a game you're most excited to see in a hot take prediction.
Yeah, takeaway number one, the two blue bloods that we grew up, you know, as we were growing up, were always perennial contenders to win March Madness, UNC and Duke.
We'll just have to have him repeat.
These guys.
Sorry, you were.
I know. All right. UNC and Duke, the two blue bloods that, as we were growing up, were dominant powerhouses. Their new head coaches have officially taken up the mantle and will be here for the next 10 plus years. Hubert Davis and John Shire know how to coach basketball. They know how to recruit and they know how to execute and they know how to get their teams up for big games. I think the one thing that I didn't mention before about the round of 32 is that it's 2 days later, right? And that's a thing that it doesn't get talked about enough. Now these teams in the Sweet 16, they have 4 days of rest. Like, if they couldn't get up 2 days later, now they have an opportunity to get to rest, to practice, to scout their opponent and really know what they do well.
Might be the biggest thing. That's why the coaches with the most experience always succeed, is because they have experience scouting on such short notice and game planning on such short notice. So that's a good point.
The UNC Duke thing, Zach Edey is he's a pro. He's a pro. I don't know if he's going to be a starter in the NBA. I presume not, but I think if there's a savvy head coach in the NBA who can utilize him as a second unit center and you can play a little bit of Edey ball, he's such a good passer. He's got such good footwork, great hands. He finishes around the rim. He knows how to seal defenders. He knows how to use his size and he knows how to protect the rim. Like, the guy has really grown. I know they beat us when we played Purdue, when they had Jaden Ivey on their team. He's a completely different player than he was then. I owe him a bit of an apology. Some team should take a shot on him third thing, just really quickly, is that the bracket creators know exactly what they're doing and they did an excellent job of setting up fantastic matchups. We get a rematch of last year. We get Creighton in Tennessee. If UNC wins, Arizona wins, we get the Caleb Love Bowl. Like, we're really primed for some excellent matchups here in the round of 16 and in the Elite Eight. So just kudos to them.
Mm. Nice. Any hot take prediction or game you're most excited to see?
The Duke Houston one, like Nick said. I think the Gonzaga Purdue one. I'm always excited to see teams play Purdue, because if they can try and solve the ED problem and someone finally does it, like, I'm going to be like, wow, that's impressive. UNC Alabama will be fun. Nate Oates is fiery on the sideline, but I think their tournament ends here.
Yeah. I'll go reverse order. I would say I'm interested to see those, that Caleb Love bowl side of the bracket, because I think Arizona and UNC, if they dominate both Clemson and Alabama respectively, like, that's going to get me even more amped for that matchup. I think these teams can really make a statement here against it. They could, UNC can slow Alabama down. They're super fast paced. You know, the Lopes, Grand Canyon made it a close game until the end in the round of 32. So I'm anticipating UNC as they continue to get rolling, and they were labeled as the quote unquote weakest one seed, kind of have something to prove. And then did it with Arizona against Clemson. I think Arizona's a really strong team. They're well coached. And I think they could just have an opportunity to bounce Clemson and make a serious statement. I would say game I'm most excited to see, probably Creighton, Tennessee. Strong defensive matchup with really talented players across the board. We saw Creighton tested by an Oregon team that was grossly underseeded and way more talented than an 11 seed. And that was a fantastic game that went to OT. We saw our streaky boys, you know, take Tennessee to the brink and came down to the final seconds of the game, which was really exciting. So I'm excited to see Rick Barnes to see if he can get over the hump, McDermott to see if he can get back in there. So I think that matchup is going to be really, really strong, and it could come down to the wire more so than any of the other matchups. I would say takeaways, the ones I have written down here. Izzo calling for auto bids to smaller conferences to be removed is absolute BS. Because clearly, look, you know, maybe not every tournament, but here the cream rose to the top. So the cream rose to the top. We end up getting the best teams. And if we didn't have those auto bids to the smaller conferences, we wouldn't have these fun little Cinderellas that we got to see in the round of 64, which I think make the tournament. You know, like guys like Jack Oakey on Oakland, that makes the tournament. You know, a win by Yale, right? We all thought Auburn was going to smack the crap out of Yale, and Yale wins. And yes, they get crushed by SDSU, but that's still a fun little victory that they had to have, and a fun little upset that creates that momentum of a potential Cinderella. You know, even NC State, yeah, they won the ACC, but that Cinderella potential is really strong. I would say
that's Sister Jean. Then if, you know, Loyola didn't make it those years.
God forbid. I would say UConn, Purdue. It's kind of similar to what Nick said, but UConn, Purdue, UNC, and Arizona are in a class of their own. I think Houston's great, and I think A&M is a lot stronger than they presented. And I would probably throw them in there too, but those are the four most impressive teams to me as of right now, which kind of goes to my excitement for a potential UNC-Arizona matchup. But I'm with you. I think Purdue and ED are a lot more exciting and a lot more complete than we've seen in years past. So that's good to see. And then I would say on the note of Kentucky, Calipari's last 4 years, missed the tournament, first round exit, second round exit, first round exit. Like, we might be heading for a divorce here in Lexington. And I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if both parties decided it was best to move on. So
correct me if I'm wrong, but like, I feel like when we started this podcast way back when, almost 8 years ago, 7.5 years ago, that one of you, I don't know if it was then or if it was like a year or two in, one of you guys said that Calipari is a very overrated coach. Does that resonate with either of you guys?
I said that I was bullish on Sean Miller being an overrated coach in Arizona.
No, I remember that. But it was like a thing where it was like Krzyzewski and Roy Williams. Like, those guys are like already in a tier of their own. Even Tom Izzo and you know, maybe Boeheim. Like, those are like Calipari is a legendary coach, but I think a lot of the flack that he was given was that he's had so much talent there over the course of his career, and it hasn't shown that many results. He's won a couple, but like, he's had so many NBA stars, and he's an amazing recruiter. But I think someone said that he's not a great coach, or he's not like one of the greats when it comes to coaching.
I think if you point to this, to the stats and the data, that's true. It just is. Like, they won with Anthony Davis. I don't think there was a way that they didn't win that tournament. Like, Anthony Davis was just that.
We could have been coaching.
Yeah.
We were saying at the bar on Saturday, I think Toss and I forget who we were talking to, but like, Anthony Davis is probably the best college basketball player I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, realistically, like, he's in the number, I've never seen a better college basketball player than him.
And certainly from a standpoint of like, when a college player affects a game defensively, like Anthony Davis did, like, it kind of makes it impossible for players to even play offense against them. Like, he was just that good. The court is smaller than the NBA, right? And so, like, that's why Edie Ball, like, works so well, is the teams that are playing against him, they don't know what to do. Like, they drive in the paint, and then they, like, turn it back out to the three-point line because they get scared of the guy. And Anthony Davis was like that, but he was, you know, 10 times more athletic than Zach Edey. The thing about Calipari is he's an excellent recruiter. He's an excellent identifier of talent. He certainly knows how to communicate with them. And then these guys aren't just good in college. They're good in the pros too. So there's something about who he's going after and what he's preparing them for that works, right? Because if you just want to look at the Kentucky guards in the last 10 years, like, yeah, the guys have all been studs. And I have no doubt that Reed Sheppard and Rob Dillingham will also be studs in the NBA. But yeah, he doesn't have the adjustments, the inspiration, maybe, like, in game. I don't know. There's something about his aura that's not the same as the rest of those guys. And some of it has to do with winning. And I think some of it, to me, has to do with, like, disposition of the guy himself too. He's a little bit more Patino vibes, right? He's a little, like, he's a little slimier. Ironically. He's a little more slick back hair. Like,
literally.
And I think some of that comes into play when we were comparing him to, like, the guys right now. Like, Mark Few is, like, cookie cutter, classic basketball coach, loves his team, loves his universe. Not that Calipari doesn't. It's just, like, the way that we receive him is not the same, right?
Sure. 100%. Yeah, I think it's a really – yeah, he said it best. And I would be interested to see if the divorce is on the way. But you got to give him credit in the sense that he always gets his guys ready to play in the NBA. Like Booker, like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's had some of the best NBA players as far as guard standpoint. Even Karl Anthony Towns, obviously Anthony Davis. Like, some of the best players have come through Kentucky, and they're almost always pretty successful in some capacity. Last couple for you guys right here. Give me your 30-second skinny on Ohtani, Nick, Toss. I think I've said my piece on social already.
Just throwing out there, did you guys see what Astros owner said about it?
No.
He said it's one of the top three scandals in baseball, and it's a blemish on the game.
Well, I want to throw out this.
It could be.
His interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, lied about graduating from college, and he lied about working for the Red Sox prior to being hired by the Angels. Not Ohtani, hired by the Angels in 2007. So he was hired by the Angels, and then he went with Ohtani, then he was hired by the Dodgers, obviously as a part of, I guess, a courting period. Nick, do you think Ohtani was gambling and this is a cover-up, or do you think he actually is trying to help his boy out who had lost way more money than he could afford?
I'm not going to speculate. He's addressing the media today, so let's just wait and see what he has to say, but I'm not ready to speculate on that.
Okay, sounds good.
Can I just ask...
I know. Seriously, I just don't want to, like, call him out and be like, "You're."
I'm just asking what you. Okay.
Don't get mad because I don't want to speculate.
I'm not getting mad.
What do you guys think about, like, are we going to get to a point where athletes can bet on sports that are not their own, and should we be at that place?
I think we should be at that place already because all of these leagues, their partners are betting companies. Like, why is the NBA or not the NBA? The NBA too, but like the NFL, every Sunday, you know, you're seeing Caesars, MGM commercials. You know, we're at Radio Row, like all of the big booths are like FanDuel and like DraftKings. It's like these, like, sure, I get it. Like, that's a conflict of interest when you're betting on your own league and like the teams that you play for and players that you play with. But why can't a player bet on baseball if he's a football player? Why can't a player bet on basketball especially if it's not even the same season?
It's just tough to regulate. I mean, if there was a way to regulate it, then sure. Like, if there was a way to, like, keep track of that, then yeah. They can't bet on their own sport because it's, like, literally insider trading.
No, I mean, I have no questions about that. Like, that's just, like, that seems obvious, right? Like, we
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It's all, look, setting up the intricacies of online sports books, like, the way that those are programmed, it's not, like, simple. Right. Like, the lines are adjusting, things are moving. Like, it's a lot of ones and zeros that we don't understand. I have to imagine that they could make a custom book on FanDuel that Shohei Ohtani can use that allows him to bet on everything except for baseball.
Yeah. Like, I feel like it's
possible. I don't know. I'm throwing that out there. Maybe there's another reason. I'm sure there's another argument. I'd love to hear it about, like, why athletes shouldn't bet on sports in general. Professional athletes shouldn't bet on sports in general. And I'd, I don't know what the angle is, but I'm sure there's got to be someone out there, and maybe we bring him on the show and have him pitch it to us why it's bad.
For sure, for sure. All right, guys, we'll rock and roll. Good stuff today. Good college basketball talk. Good little tiny talk. We'll see what happens, and then we'll let the speculation begin after he addresses the media, for sure. And we'll see you guys next time. Great weekend of sports. We had a little shebang at Nickel Mine that went really well. More to come on that front as events go. Stripe Sports, hit your free throws because they're free. We love you.
Shout out to BB for putting together a really good bracket so far. Nick, you got to be a voice in the air, man. She's got to keep going. She's in the hunt.
I mean, I can't tell her to pick anything because my bracket sucks compared to hers. So that's all her.
Let's keep the money in the family.
It'd be great. Agreed. Great win. Root for Britain to take home the gold. All right, we'll see you guys. And shout out Bryce Flanagan, homie of a homie. Actually, probably our homie too. He won our day of contest. Pretty impressive. 15 out of 19 picks correct, which is pretty solid. Yeah, really, really solid.
Anyone 200 bucks?
Bone tied. No, that close.
Him and another person had 15, but he had the higher score. As far as higher scoring teams go. So he won. Toss, out of the three of us, Toss had 13. I had 12. Nick, you had, I think, 11. So we all did pretty solid. There are some people at the bottom of the barrel with five. One guy had five, which is just.
They may have zero.
No, I was going through some of our buddies' brackets. Like Berman started off 0 of 4. And I was like, oh man, this is going to be a disaster.
I mean, it's 50-50 too. It's just like how many coin flips do you get wrong?
I was like, Autumn was one of the last people to submit. And so I was like, Bryce was one of the first. And so he was winning the entire time. Autumn started off 7 of 7.
Woo.
And then Ethan fell Robinson. Apart. I know. I was like, whoa. And then it didn't happen. But it's very fun. Good stuff, guys. We'll see y'all next time. Hit your free throws.
And now, this is the moment you've all been waiting for. We are live on the Charity Stripe Podcast with your hosts, Alex, Josh, and Nick.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.